Welcome back, one and all, to the Friday edition of The Damage Report with me, John Arola. I am back once again, probably just for one more day. I don't really want to stick around. You guys will get sick of me, so I'm probably going to leave for a few months. But I'm here now, I'm here today, and I've got Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
It's great. You're a psychological terrorist. You know what that does to your producers? Do you know what that does to your producers?
Well, it's okay, because I understand that it's putting a lot of pressure on them, but thankfully, the thing that I fear most in life is losing my producers, so all of that combines really well for my stress level.
You're right, it is about you, John. Good point.
At the end of the day, main character. Anyway, I also have a lot of stress over the possibility of technical problems. I am broadcasting out of a shed that that I built, so that's fun. We're going to see what happens. But assuming, Brett, that everything goes well, we actually have a lot of interesting topics to talk about, including promises of political vengeance to come, representatives calling each other whores, that's fun, as well as big updates from Israel and Palestine. The conflict continues, and a whole lot more, including our Garbage People of the Week, which I haven't done in months, but I'm very excited to do with you once again.
Oh, me, this is my turn to talk? I'm so happy. I'm sorry. You just stopped talking, right? Did anyone else notice that?
When I started talking, you had been about to say something. I figured you would do what most people is, which is just ignore what I said and then go back to what you were going to say.
Yeah, I do that. But then I spaced out. So I didn't even.
You did. You did. Yeah, that was very kind of you to stop paying attention. Yeah. Anyway, I think everyone watching this can see that I haven't lost a step and the show is just as professional as it always has been. So with that said, for all of you watching live, please hit the like button, share the stream. You can send comments. We're going to respond as we go during our social breaks. Heads up to everyone that might be wondering why there wasn't a pre-port. That is what I would classify as just too much at this point. So there will be a return of the pre-port, but not in the immediate future. I have a daughter that requires time of me and there's a lot going on. But anyway, that'll be coming back. The news will be coming back. Garbage People will be coming back. So buckle up for that. And with all that said, Brett, are you ready to start this thing semi-professionally?
Sure.
As the legal threats against Donald Trump mount, so too do his threats against his opposition. Threats for what he'll do if he becomes president. He had an interview with Univision this week, and he laid it out about as clear as he ever has before, saying, "They have done something that allows the next party, I mean, if I happen to be president, and I see somebody who's doing well and beating me very badly, I say go down and indict them. Mostly what that would be, you know, they would be out of business. They'd be out. They'd be out of the election." Super clear. Super clear about why he'd be doing it, what the goal would be. But he's not 100% sure that it's going to end up there. He's sort of like warning them that maybe they can back off. He says, if they do this, and they've already done it, but if they want to follow through on this, yeah, it could certainly happen in reverse. It could certainly happen in reverse. Saying, hey, maybe if you back off, if you stop these court cases against me, then maybe I don't have to lock up you and your families in the future. So that's fun from an authoritarian sense. But then he starts to sort of lose his way. He says, what they've done is they've released the genie out of the box. You understand that. They've done something that nobody thought would happen. They've taken a president who's very popular. I got 75 million votes, much more than that. I believe no president's ever gotten that many votes. And they've taken that number of people. And I think you can double it, or almost you can triple it in terms of the real feeling. You can't do that. You can't go after people. Unless you're him, presumably. Now, that said, that's the substance, and we will return to that. But there were just some little things, Brett, that I'm sure you picked up on there that really bothered me. I understand that people are frustrated with the energy level and, you know, capacity of Joe Biden. It makes total sense. But he is, like, underrated for Swiss cheesiness of the brain. Genies, quite notably, live in lamps. That's sort of their whole deal, really. Not boxes. And clearly he has boxes on the brain, but this is a guy who's confusing the leadership of China and North Korea. He's forgetting where genies live. Does he know what year it is?
It's weird that you would take this moment to attack Christina Aguilera for saying that genies are in a bottle as well.
Yeah, that's weird too. Never,
you put your D in a box, the genie goes in the lamp or the bottle. But you don't have a box full of genies. I don't know what bargain basement knockoff genies. I know he likes to rub things without their permission, but that was ridiculous. Listen, it's fine to say there is criticism to be had about the timing of the trials against Trump. Like, Trump has been indicted for many crimes, but many of them, the people prosecuting even said, like, I don't want to do this, just give the documents back. But that said, like, Donald Trump does go on trial on March 4th of 2024, and Super Tuesday is on March 5th. So the timing of these trials, I am certain, is politically motivated, but the content of these trials is absolutely, from what I've seen, substantiated. If you look at the one in Florida, multiple, quote, co-conspirators have pled guilty already. So this isn't just out of thin air or whole cloth that these indictments have been brought. What Donald Trump is trying to do is go way past anything he has a right to say and say, oh, no, what I would do is go after these people for purely political reasons because he wants to be seen as the victim.
Yeah, 100%. It's really just like it's a clarification of the stance that we know that he has. And yeah, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that this is what he's going to do. He's the guy who went into the 2016 election with the chance of lock her up. The idea that he considers going after your opponents to be an unprecedented thing has never made any sense. But I want to make sure that people understand that it's not just him. And if it were just him that is going to dispatch the DOJ or something, look, that's going to be very frustrating to a lot of people. But they still theoretically have to prove that Biden or Hunter Biden or whoever has actually done something, and you can defend yourself legally. It gets scarier when it's not just Trump, when others are sort of playing the same game. And we got additional evidence of that coming out of the new House Speaker Mike Johnson. He had a meeting with moderates within his party this week, and he appeared to agree, apparently, with Republican lawmakers who argued that since Biden's polling numbers have been so weak, there's less of a political imperative to impeach him, according to Republicans who attended that. So he is openly, I guess if he was doing better, we'd impeach him, but he's not. So I guess we won't. You know, all that stuff about corruption and taking bribes and everything, that doesn't really matter. He's not really doing that well. Like, this is not just Trump. I assume we should be able to have a slightly higher standard for Mike Johnson or for the other Republicans. Maybe not. I don't know. I've been gone for a while.
Right. Whether you're going to charge someone of a crime and try them for a crime should probably depend not on the political factors at the time, mm-hmm. but rather on whether they committed a crime. That's it.
Yeah.
But obviously, I mean, I don't want to be the guy who's like, I can't believe politics is so political, but that's absolutely what it is. And the best thing is going to be like, they might have to change their mind later on. I mean, Trump puts up a bunch of bluster about how this actually helped me. Even Ron DeSantis said that the indictments against Trump helped Trump. I don't think that's true. And I'm certain that won't be true as we get closer and closer to primaries. And there are ongoing trials, gavel to gavel, like it's some kind of weird crossover between West Wing and Law and Order happening at the exact same time.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the recent polls have me worried. It's still a long ways away. And we don't know exactly what's going to happen with Trump. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with Biden. We'll have to see. But I remain a little bit worried. That said, I want to turn away from the interview to some other updates. In at least one of Donald Trump's upcoming trials, we have updates on witnesses. And in particular, when it comes to the documents at Mar-a-Lago, CNN released a report late last night saying that a plumber, a maid, a chauffeur, and a woodworker are among the staffers of Mar-a-Lago, including some current staffers, as well as contract workers who federal prosecutors are going to be calling to testify against Donald Trump and his two co-defendants. Other likely witnesses include Trump Secret Service agents, former intelligence officials, as well as people who were in the room during that infamous call where he produced the bomb Iran plans. Currently, the trial is set to begin in Florida in May. That is before the election. There had been the possibility that Eileen Cannon was going to shift that, but apparently the update is that as of this morning, she has announced that, at least as of right now, that she is not going to do that, which I actually find that to be a more interesting development, perhaps, than the fact that we have a better idea of the witnesses. You can dive into that report if you want a little bit of information about what those witnesses have previously told prosecutors that they've seen. There's a lot of reports of them seeing documents, although many of them don't seem to know exactly what the documents were. It doesn't seem like they were rooting around in the boxes. They just saw that, yeah, there's official government-looking documents sort of just strewn around haphazardly. But the idea that Eileen Cannon, a judge who has previously shown an incredible willingness or desire to help out Donald Trump in whatever way she can, if she's not going to manipulate the timing of this, that's more consequential than maybe any other decision that she's made. And obviously there's time for her to reverse that, Brett, but we were previously talking on the show about the timing of these things. We would probably want to get these trials done before the election, so at least they'll happen at all. But what do you think?
Well, a lot of the public sentiment around political figures has to do with what's in the news cycle at the time, not whether those elements of the news cycle have been resolved. Like, if I'm Donald Trump and I feel like I'm innocent, I want those trials to be wrapped up before we go to vote. But if they're just starting, they're in the ether. They're out there and people are thinking about it and they're like, ugh. And I think one of the reasons that Donald Trump lost is, A, obviously people were stuffing ballot boxes, obviously voter fraud, even though no one can prove that at all. It's a joke. But one of the reasons he lost is people are like, just Donald Trump's too much. I can't handle it. There's this horrible feeling of, A, how it is out there. At the time, it was COVID. People are just like, I can't. It's too stressful. Plus, Trump is just too much of a headache. I can't handle all this anymore. Right now, Biden gets that, like, it just feels horrible out there, negativity on his polling numbers. But Trump is still the one where people are like, I can't handle the guy. And so the question will be, will folks want to jump off of, like, the boat that's just kind of making them feel a little seasick and onto the one that has, like, several holes in it and is going right for the rapids? Like, no one's going to want to do that in the calculation of the Democrats. But Eileen Cannon is a Trump-appointed judge, and many Trump-appointed judges have done things that don't go so well for Donald Trump. And so we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah. You know, it's this is getting into, like, raw speculation, but there had been a lot of reports coming out over the past couple of weeks of, like, increasing concern over Eileen Cannon, whether she should remain in charge of this. Is it possible that this is a sort of strategic thing of, you know, rejecting, at least for now, the possibility of changing the timeline to reassure critics that she can be considered a responsible judge in this case? I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, okay, we want to get to Donald Trump's response to this, because he did not like this report coming out. Although, again, most of these witnesses were going to be testifying, we already know that they have talked to federal prosecutors. So I don't know why he'd be so shocked by this. Like, it's a confirmation that they'll be coming back, and a confirmation that some of them might not know that much. But he put out this long Truth Social post. I'm not going to read this entire thing. There's little tidbits that I find interesting. I mean, he talks about how the boxes were openly and plainly brought from the White House, as is my right under the Presidential Records Act. He really thinks that if he just keeps claiming that, something that has never been true, then I guess he doesn't have to have a trial. And they were openly and plainly brought. You avoided for like a year and a half turning them back over. And after you turned some of them over, you hid others. There's nothing open or plain about that, except perhaps the law breaking. But anyway, he says he even supplied upon request security tapes to these election interfering thugs. He was required to turn over the tapes. Like, this is not charity, buddy. This is not like you being a mensch or something. Like, yeah, you had to turn over those tapes.
He wants credit for not breaking more laws than he already laws. Had.
100%. And then he goes into, of course, you know, forget all that stuff. Biden had documents on his garage floor by his cherished Corvette. I love that he at least respects the connection, the relationship between a man and his cherished sports car, or Chinatown, where it was just learned that boxes moved freely in and out. I don't know what that update is supposed to be a reference to. Probably nothing. And then blah, blah, blah. He's very angry about all this. So look, it's a lot of bluster. It's a lot of defenses that are not defenses that we've heard before. But coming out of this, I mean, we can't ignore the fact that there's a lot of people that can attest to the documents being there. I don't know why that matters so much, because we know that the documents were there, but there's a lot of potential what he might see as people who should have been loyal to him, who are willing now to work with prosecutors. So it's not great for him. Any other thoughts, Brett?
I just love it. A plumber, a maid, a woodworker, a chauffeur, a priest, a rabbi, walk into a mar. And it's just a complete setup for a joke because America is such a joke right now. All of our leaders look like animatronic figures at Disneyland that are breaking down in the Hall of Presidents, which is a crappy ride anyway. Like, ugh, I hate it. It's so sad.
But when was the last time? Was there a time where our politics or even just our presidential elections weren't stupid, like utterly ridiculously stupid?
I mean, they weren't. No, they
Obama they versus been, Romney.
They maybe. Have been not stupid before. They're expressly the stupidest they've ever been. There have been stupid things along the way, like a guy going like, I'm going to cancel these important groups, these important federal agencies like. Pass. I don't remember them. Oops. And there have been like silly things that have gotten you like in trouble, like Michael Dukakis in a weird outfit in a tank.
Yeah.
But and they've been mean. They've been like wildly tricky and horrible and mean. Stupid things have sunk presidential candidates like Nixon not shaving before a debate and looking sweaty. But they've never been this expressly stupid. I don't remember anything quite on the level of. Yeah, I took a bunch of boxes and put them by my toilet. And in those boxes are laser secrets. Like, horrible.
Just relentlessly dumb. But anyway, it's not just dumb. It's also dirty. And we're going to turn to that right now. It's not just dumb. It's also dirty. And we're going to turn to that right now. Donald Trump isn't interested in being on the debate stage with Ron DeSantis, but he is still interested in Ron DeSantis and not just in beating him, something that seems probably inevitable at this point. He wants to utterly destroy Ron DeSantis. And Trump appears to have surrounded himself by a lot of other people who for some reason really want to take DeSantis down, but not just in this election. Not just in terms of his political future. They want to destroy his reputation and make him effectively just a target for mockery for the rest of his time. And there is this report in Rolling Stone about the lengths they've been going to make him seem not just like he shouldn't be president, but like a gross weirdo is how I think I would phrase it. So according to a person with direct knowledge of the matter, a recurring inside joke among senior staffers of Trump 2024 is we aren't going to be done with him until he's fat again. This is the most mean girls thing I've ever seen in politics. They want to wreck him until he stress eats and his health is destroyed. That is a level of disdain for a politician we don't often see in these sorts of politics. And we're going to get into some of the ways they've been trying to increase his waist size, Brett. But why do they hate Ron DeSantis so much? I mean, he's challenging Trump, but plenty of people are. And they're not trying to ruin all of their BMIs.
The truth is they are trying to ruin everybody they're running against. It's like you ask political operatives, what's the most accurate portrayal of life behind the scenes in politics? It's not West Wing, it's Veep. It's just people being horrible at each other in the most horrible, toxic ways. Like I know people who work in that and they talk like that behind the scenes because your whole job is to beat people and you want to beat them to a pulp. And Ron DeSantis is, and they know it. And the thing about Trump is he just tries to be he tries to seem cooler than everybody else. And he already has Ron DeSantis on tape in an ad for Ron DeSantis where he's dorkily reading to his kid from The Art of the Deal. Like it is pathetic. Ron DeSantis is pathetic. He's trying to benefit from being loyal to Trump and then beat Trump. It is a stupid calculation. He shouldn't have run and he's falling flat on his face. His only hope is that Donald Trump gets put into literal prison before the election.
Yeah. Yeah. And even that would not be a guarantee that he would be able to replace him. But okay, so there's a long list of things that they're using to try to take this guy down. We're going to run through some of them. So Team Trump has attacked Ron DeSantis's penis size. I don't know what evidence they have, pro or con.
I think it's just his overall vibe, John.
Probably.
You can tell.
they're not 100% wrong. Anyway, they've suggested that Ron DeSantis might be gay. They have suggested on social media that he might be a pedophile or a groomer, which is a particularly low blow against a guy who has tried to declare virtually every member of the LGBTQ plus community to be those things. They've sent out, in reference to the renewal of Bootgate, which I was gone during this time. Everybody like lost their S over Bootgate a couple weeks ago, but that wasn't new. Did people forget that that was a thing we talked about like a year ago? But anyway, it came back. And a top spokesman for Trump said that soon DeSantis is going to wish for more in-flight biohazard stories instead of having to deal with his shoes that are more appropriate for America's next top model than the campaign trail. That is a reference to, there's like these stories floating around in Trump world about Ron DeSantis that aren't like, the Rolling Stone is not going to actually spread the details of it. And I've been out of the loop. So I don't know if that's a thing that we have more details about, this in-flight biohazard story, but apparently there's also a story going around involving Ron DeSantis and a Capitol Hill gym locker room that Trump is bringing up in conversations, including top strategy sessions. I don't know what either of those stories are, but presumably Ron DeSantis did something really gross, and that is the stuff that they are spreading, you know, behind the scenes. And they seem to think those are big winners. What do you think?
Like, yeah, Ron DeSantis.
Are you familiar really fast? Are you familiar with either of those stories? Maybe I missed it while I was gone.
The in-flight, but no, I'm not familiar with either of those stories. It is just something that you can, I mean, that's the true success of a campaign. If you could just say, you know, that Ron DeSantis in-flight biohazard story, and that's it. And people are just scared of that. And that's like the least of his worries. But Ron DeSantis, he was propped up. Ron DeSantis' actual skill is being like an administrator. That's what they say. He is good at actually, quote, governing or whatever you want to call it. He is not a very charismatic person when he takes the stage. He has a dorky nasally voice. He makes the strangest faces. He's like licking the back of his lips. You can't undergo like a massive body change before running for president because it looks desperate. It looks like you're just,
are you referencing cameras, him losing weight or something?
Him losing weight. Yeah. Seems desperate. It's like when your ex gets a haircut, you're like, I won. Like, you're doing this for me because I won. You need to change. I'm the same. But that's what it is. And there's just so much desperation and on-camera awkwardness that Ron DeSantis just doesn't got it. And Donald Trump has it. And he doesn't even have to bring it to the debate stage to win those debates because he's not even there.
Yeah, the thing, like I get, we talked about during our debate coverage, you know, and Brett and I did that together with J.R. Jackson. Those clips are available at youtube.com/TheYoungTurks. So definitely check those out. That Ron DeSantis is not getting any better at this. He's incredibly awkward. Him trying to, you know, be like off the cuff is not a good idea because he doesn't have the instincts. And when he's like well prepped on the material, he delivers it in a really robotic sense, saying the exact same phrases multiple times. But all of this that makes Ron DeSantis look so bad is with Trump not being on the debate stage. And I feel kind of robbed that we don't get to at least see Trump utterly destroy Ron DeSantis one time on the debate stage. He could probably finish DeSantis off, and yet he's not. Maybe it's like a Good Place thing where he's trying to draw the torture out for as long as possible before Ron DeSantis is ejected from this thing, but it's almost too bad. Anyway, I want to close just by saying we're not going to dive into this a ton because it's gross in every way, as you'll see. But apparently, behind the scenes, the war between Congresswoman Green and Congresswoman Boebert continue at least in one direction, because Marjorie Green is going around and trashing Representative Boebert as a, quote, whore to their GOP colleagues. She's going around and referring to Boebert as a whore. What is that supposed to reference? I don't know. Why should that matter in any way for two politicians? I don't know. But Green is not even really denying it. The Daily Beast asked her about the accusations. She did not deny saying it, just as she didn't deny the other times that she has badmouthed Green. She seems to like it, but says, why are you working on a story? Because you like to write trash. You just can't help yourself. Which gives me the vibes of like a person who you went to high school with posting on Facebook about how they don't like drama. Like, you're the one going around and calling her a whore. Yeah, okay, maybe they're drawn in by the fact that it's provocative or something, but you're a congresswoman and you're calling another congresswoman a whore. Why are you doing that? Why are you not talking about solitary confinement or whatever thing you pretend to care about this week? And again, as in previous like blowups, it doesn't seem, I could be wrong, we don't know. It doesn't seem like Boebert is really doing anything to justify the constant. Boebert's the worst. I despise her. But what is she doing to cause Green to continually attack her in this way? Oh, you know, you have the answer?
Hand jobs in a theater. Hand jobs in a theater? Is that boob gate?
Look, that is a reason for people who have an issue with Boebert, you know, attacking whatever, drag queens or something for public performances. That I think is a reason those people would attack her. But why would Green care about that? I don't know.
Because everyone calls Green a whore for getting a divorce and then starting to bang the Newsmax guy. Is like, I have answers for all these seemingly rhetorical questions.
How about we just don't call anyone a whore?
That's so boring. How about we be totally respectful of everybody? It's 2023, John, and this is politics. No one's going, "Bo, the right honorable gentleman from Tennessee." No one does that anymore, John. This isn't like the heightened Sorkin version of politics. This is the desperate housewives of Rifle, Colorado, and and you know, pimple fart Georgia. No offense, but like that's
to the
it.
People of pimple fart.
To the, your to lovely the good people of pimple fart. It's easy. My favorite thing about this is like, you know, when two people are so horrible, you just assume they like each other.
That's exactly what I would have expected, that they should be teammates.
You guys should be hanging out, going shopping and being like, oh, yeah. I also like just kicking puppies. Don't you love kicking puppies?
Maybe they just get competitive over the puppy kicking, I suppose.
But that's exactly what you don't expect. But that's what happens, is they're just horrible at each other because they're so horrible and they want to be the queen of horrible. Right now, Marjorie Taylor Greene enjoys a more comfortable lead in her reelection bid, and she has more proximity to Donald Trump. There are no people that are really suspecting that Donald Trump is going to choose Lauren Boebert to become the next, you know, vice president of the United States. And there is like tangible speculation, though I don't find it founded, that Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to be given that position. And she is just rubbing it in like crazy. Plus, she's roided out because she's doing so much CrossFit. She's just getting those injections straight to the butt, and it's going then straight to her head.
All of what he said is true. I cannot deny it, so I won't. Anyway, we're going to take our first break. We come back, we're going to be turning to arguably equally serious materials, developments between Israel, Palestine, the conflict there, all that and more after this. Okay, everybody who's just joining us now, thank you for joining us live on this Friday edition of the show. Reminder that I will not only be hosting the rest of the show, including Garbage People, which will come a little bit later on, but also the first hour of the Young Turks, where I'll be joined by Rayvana as well as Mondale. So definitely tune in for that. With that said, we're going to jump into very important updates from overseas. The White House has announced multiple updates when it comes to the conflict between Israel and Palestine, or at least on Palestine. They said that Israel has now agreed to effectively like make official some humanitarian pauses that had been going on intermittently for some time. These will be daily 4-hour pauses in military operations in the area of northern Gaza to allow people in select changing regions to move south, either to move to an area that is not under attack, or in more southern areas to potentially have some time to at least get out and get some aid before once again sheltering. A senior Israeli official appeared to confirm this, telling CNN that the Israelis are calling these tactical localized pauses that will shift from area to area on a daily basis. The neighborhood or area will be given several hours notice of the pause to allow people to travel for aid or relief. So that's, I guess, the closest we'll get based on White House pressure to some sort of extended ceasefire, which Israeli government officials continue to say is not going to happen. Biden had apparently asked Benjamin Netanyahu for these daily pauses, as well as an overall 3-day pause to allow for hostage negotiations. There's been no movement on that, but Biden has confirmed that he asked for the daily pauses. Netanyahu went on to say that there would be no ceasefire without the release of hostages. There was apparently an offer a couple of days ago for something like that, which was rejected by Netanyahu. So as of right now, that's the development. We have some additional statements by Anthony Blinken saying that they believe that there have been far too many deaths amongst Palestinian civilians. And there's headlines all over the place this morning that people have probably seen that they are growing. The White House is growing more concerned about civilian deaths as we apparently pass 11,000 overall deaths. And the Secretary of State says that they believe that those numbers might actually be an underestimate. The White House is growing increasingly concerned. But anyway, a lot of updates. Brett, what do you make of it?
I mean, that's a lot of updates. I don't know, like, so I think when you ask people on the left what there's like a, I don't know how to respond to all of that stuff. So when you say it's an attack on Palestine, on Gaza. Okay, here's my overall take on the situation. It is the fact that Hamas is using the entire population of Palestine as a human shield. People on the left definitely just try to ignore that as a fact. But that is a fact. And you have to acknowledge that that is absolutely 100% a tactic. In fact, pretty much the only tactic that Hamas can use to succeed. And that is a fact on the ground. And I it very much frustrates me when people just ignore that that's happening. That said, you can't, as Israeli is the Israeli government, Benjamin Netanyahu, you can't just keep killing civilians at such a huge rate for that long before you lose every bit of support that you have on the planet. Now you can either eventually, and this is kind of the pattern that follows any kind of attack by Hamas on Israeli interests, right? When that happens, the Israeli government hits back way, way harder. What Hamas has said to the New York Times that it wants is a permanent state of war. Why? Because Hamas is losing. Because Hamas is losing the support of the Arab world, as people like, you know, people like the Saudis are doing better business with Israel over time, as Egypt has better relationships with Israel over time, as all of the Sunnis get mad that the Shias are you know, allying with Iran and Iraq. They kind of coalesce around Israel more and more, unless Israel fights back too hard in a way where the Pan-Arab Alliance just kind of gets back together against them. Mm-hmm. And Benjamin Netanyahu's actions are doing that. But it drives me nuts when people are like, oh, shut up about the human shields. Like, that's what's happening. But I say this to everybody. Like, the people on the left do such a great job of identifying who in this conversation can be who's being left out, or who is being treated horribly, or what minorities are getting treated poorly, except when it comes to Jews. Like, I hate to break it to you, that same voice that goes into your mind when you're like, oh, we're having a conversation about boys and girls dating. I feel like we're alienating. There's some kind of heteronormative discussion going on here. You have to acknowledge the anti-Semitism that grows in there. You need to remember that there are probably, there's tens, if not hundreds of millions of people in the world who, as you're having these discussions, are on the verge of saying, yeah, but the Jews suck, let's get rid of them. Like, that's a fact. And you need to factor that in. And factor that in with every bit of your framing. That said, I will point you back to what I said earlier. We're like, yes, Israel, you're winning. You can't keep winning this way. It's bad for your own interests, but it is also wildly immoral.
Yeah, and I would argue that, you know, you were sort of saying there you can't continue. I mean, I think in terms of public polling about what people think about the conflict, it's clear that it has already taken a massive toll on what people think about it. And I mean, just by running the numbers, it seems like how could it not? I mean, like, over 1,500 people were killed in the initial attack, one of the singularly most disgusting, abhorrent actions in literally years. And now 10 times as many people have been killed in the reaction to it. Like, people are going to see that. And, you know, even if initially the mainstream media is predisposed to present the story in a particular way, and I think there's even been some shifting of that, at a certain point, the numbers get just undeniable of how utterly horrific it is. And when the idea is that that's going to continue and perhaps accelerate, then yeah, I think people are going to respond to that. Some of the frustration that went into your comments, I don't know exactly everything that's been said or who you're referencing there. I don't deny the tactic of using human shields. Obviously, that doesn't mean that you can kill thousands of people. And the issue is that the truth of the fact that human shields are used can also be used to justify almost anything, even in instances where perhaps it was not accurate. The fact that it is done doesn't mean that it is always done in every instance. And it seems like the argument is in every case is that justifies whatever happens. In any event, the amount of deaths is absolutely horrific. I can't believe how fast we got from 10,000 to 11,000. And if the Secretary of State is saying that they think the number is an undercount, I don't know what data they're referencing there, but that's horrible. And so this is what we've got right now. We've got brief pauses for people to move. Reminder that there have been cases where routes that have been carved out for people to flee along have themselves be bombed. So there are civilians who are worried about that. There were reports out of one time when it had appeared that a blockade of a hospital had been broken, but then people fleeing, including doctors, were shot at. We don't know exactly who did the shooting, but then they had to flee back into the hospital. So even when this is being put out there as a potential solution for some of the civilians for limited time in limited areas, there's a lot of concern that is not actually a guarantee that you might be safe.
Yeah, 4-hour pause is like, that's not what anyone's asking for. 4 hours is not a ceasefire.
You know, we've given our thoughts about it, but I want to turn now to Representative Cori Bush, who had a response to this announcement.
What is that mental anguish when you know, well, we get a break for 4 hours, but as soon as that 4 hours is over, then what? How dare we treat humans in that way? How dare we be so careless and so inhumane and heartless to where we decide that 4 hours is enough time to just to get you some stuff so that you can live a little bit longer until the bombs hit? How dare we? And how dare we treat humans as if we don't understand what it's like to be human?
Yeah, and there's a lot that hasn't been defined in this. Let's say that hypothetically, you're in one of the areas where the pause happens and you're able to go. And let's say that in those 4 hours, you're able to make a good distance, even though the infrastructure has largely been destroyed. I don't know how you're supposed to move a significant different distance in that time. Where are you supposed to go? You don't live in South Gaza. This is an incredibly densely populated area. You're fleeing to an area that even prior to the conflict had spotty at best infrastructure that has now been strained or destroyed. What are you supposed to do when you get there? There's very little humanitarian aid that's getting in. It's not like there was an overabundance, a surplus going into the conflict. So yes, it's better than you still having to be in the places being actively bombed right now. But what are you supposed to do? I haven't seen any clarification of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's playing out. This is a lot of people are doing the discourse they need to do for this to get to the better solution than the alternative. Mm-hmm. The alternative solution, like when this happened, I was like, oh, Benjamin Netanyahu is the prime minister of Israel. Is there going to be a Gaza left in 2 weeks? That's what I thought. And that's the worst thing. The better thing, the unattainable thing is like Israel being like, you guys don't do that anymore. The realistic thing, I mean, it's the easy for me to say Olympics, right? It's easy to say for you to say Olympics for everybody who doesn't live there. It's like, why don't they just get along? And anyone who tells you that this is very simple, it has an agenda that is questionable, period. Like, you're talking about the year 1948, like, you had a lot of people who, this is the homeland of the Jews. I hate people who are saying it's not like Native Americans. I'm sorry, that it is. That's where they're from. That's where Israel was, and have gone around the world with no home, a diaspora. That's what that is. And everywhere they go, they get hated. Everywhere they go, they're on the brink of annihilation. And then there was a giant And the ones that get by, they learn like a bunch of languages. They can't own land. So they get into business and suddenly they're villains for being in business.
Mm-hmm.
Like the reason that historically, you know, they're and they're not, you know, historically Jews have had to learn how to speak a bunch of different languages in a bunch of different places so they could help do merchant stuff. And now we run the world, even though everybody else who ran the world only used us if we were useful. And we were useful to help them do business deals. And that's what people hate us for. And that's when people are like, oh, Jews are Jews always trying to be the victim. Like, okay, fine. But what else do you call it? That's it. And in the wake of a Holocaust, they go, someone's like, I mean, whether it's racist against Jews are not unused to that. And I'm not, you know, like you guys go somewhere else. That's hateful, right? And everybody's like, any Jew who likes Zionism is anti-Semitic. No, it's the thing you have, it's the thing you do as a Jew. People don't want you there.
Who opposes it would be classified as that.
Anyone who, they say, Pete, there's a thing going around now that anyone who's Zionist is anti-Semitic because the original idea of Zionism was put forth so that the Europeans and the Arab countries who didn't want Jews there could get them out of those places and put them in one spot. That's a narrative going around. But Jews are not unused to people being like, get out, like, we hate you. And then Jews are like, you know, find a way. And so the way that was found for Israel is horrible. It's horrible. The UN was like, go here where all these people live. And you had a combination of people being like, I'll go. And then a combination of people who were like, I'm going to kill everybody along the way because it's been 4,000 years and we haven't had a home. It's horrible. That's horrible. And they get a home in Israel, right? Mm-hmm. And the UN's like, here's the Jewish area. Here's the Arab area. The Jews are like, okay. And the Arabs are like, not so fast. And they invade immediately. I understand why they invaded, but they invaded. And the Jews are like, well, I live here now. It was a horrible birth. It was a violent commencement. And that it's terrible. And it's wildly complicated. And it has thousands of years of history. And yes.
Unfortunately, we
people who are saying, oh, Jews, like they invade the Sinai. Well, they gave it back. And it's possible. And my point there is, it's possible to go back to what I think everybody at the end of these intense conversations want is 1967 borders. Just do it.
Yeah,
just do it. Get all the settlements out of the West Bank. Get Gaza. Get and the West Bank to be free. If you want to say from the river to the sea, Palestine. Palestine should be free. At least say like. And there can be an Israel too. I think people mean that by when they say that, but I just think that's the discourse that I think a lot of people should have. And a lot of folks just pick what they think about the history is beneficial to them. And then that's how they do the rest of their discourse. And I remind everybody what I said at the beginning of this, which is like definitely Benjamin Netanyahu's a monster and he should go, Hamas should go in 1967 borders.
Yeah, look, of all of the different tragedies, one of the political tragedies is that if and when there is actually a sustainable solution, which is hard to even imagine, it's not going to be anything that surprises. It's going to be something that was proposed literally decades ago. And that's tragic on top of all the other tragedies. Okay, I wish that we had a lot more time to dive into a lot of what you raised as well as other updates, but we are way, way over. We do have to take our second break. More news to come after this. Oh my God, we are rapidly running out of time. Okay, let's jump right into this.
After months of deliberation and long conversation with my family, I believe in my heart of hearts that I have accomplished what I set out to do for West Virginia. I've made one of the toughest decisions of my life and decided that I will not be running for re-election to the United States Senate.
Okay, that sounds maybe like good news, not necessarily for the Democratic majority in the Senate since 2024 was already going to be an incredibly difficult cycle. It almost certainly will revert to the Republicans now, but look, at least if you're sick of Joe Manchin, you don't have to deal with him anymore, right? Not so much. He's not going to be running for re-election in the Senate, but he's still hanging around and he's got some plans. Listen to this.
What I will be doing is traveling the country and speaking out to see if there is an interest in creating a movement to mobilize the middle and bring Americans together. Every incentive in Washington is designed to make our politics extreme. The growing divide between Democrats and Republicans is paralyzing Congress and worsening our nation's problems. The majority of Americans are just plain worn out.
He's accurate on that last point. I'm worn out. I'm worn out by people like him doing things like what he's talking about doing there. So he's going to be wandering across the country trying to see if he should run for president. He doesn't have, I guess, the guts to actually just put it out there and say that. Is he going to be with No Labels? We don't know. But he's just wondering, is there an interest? What is the game that we're playing, Brett? Everybody who is going to know who and what Joe Manchin is already knows. We know how popular or unpopular he is. He's not going to like wander into Nashville and suddenly the country is calling out for him to save us from Biden and from Trump. It's a myth. And while, you know, any third party candidate has a difficult road because of the structure, the nature of our elections, at least like a far left or far right candidate in theory could have the effect of pushing one of the two party candidates, even if they themselves aren't able to make it on the ballot and actually win this thing. But these centrist candidates to me make way less sense, because at least the far left and the far right candidate might not have a major party candidate that reflects their stances. But Joe Manchin already effectively has that. His economic policies, I think, are well represented by the candidates that are already in there. So anyway, look, it's not like this is the first hint we've gotten that he could be running for president, but it looks like he's moved a big step towards it. What do you think?
I don't know. When people don't seek re-election, it's either because they have a better job lined up that could be president, but it could be some random energy sector lobbyist scheme that he's got going on. And definitely not news because he's so boring. Or they can't win their re-election. And I don't know what's going to happen with that. I think he's just kind of been in there for long enough, and he's done his important, you know, Joe Manchin is important thing for long enough. But he's the one thing we need to just point out in America, when certain people say moderate, they just mean moderate vibes. They're just talking vibes. They're just talking. They want to cater to that thing that a lot of Americans have in their soul, which is like, why can't we all just kind of take the temperature down and get, why is it so polarized? But what he doesn't understand is that a lot of the policies that people want are not going to be favored by a guy like Joe Manchin. Most people want like better nationalized healthcare. Joe Manchin is not for that. A lot of people want cleaner air and water. Joe Manchin's not for that. Like, and the policies that are moderate are not policies these guys who are just for moderate vibes are going to get for anybody.
Yeah, 100%. You could have a candidate who, you know, is like a human version of Brett's Most Americans Agree segment, where, you know, forget about the Democrat and Republican. We're just going to find the things that actually poll really well, and we're going to push for those. But that's the exact opposite of what Joe Manchin is. If you actually just listed the positions he cares about and prioritizes, they're not popular. And they're already well represented in government. He, like, if there is a unity candidate, he is on substance and popularity the exact opposite of what that would be. He is effectively just a more corporate version of the mainstream parties, which are already predisposed to, you know, do what the corporations and what the, you know, the richest individuals want. So again, it's why I don't know if this is true for our audience. Just when you hear centrist, when you hear moderate, it is just so utterly, not meaningless necessarily. It has been given a meaning that it does not deserve by the media class that largely agrees with the status quo. So to put forward a candidate like this and say that it is anything other than another tool for the status quo to maintain itself is just utterly ridiculous. I wish we could get into, you know, polling wise, he's not going to have a chance. Some of his votes that he has taken, like helping to kill the child tax credit, voting against codifying Roe v. Wade, voting against the voting rights bill. He's just done a lot of really reprehensible stuff. None of it screams unity to me.
I'd just like to say he's facing Jim Justice, who is a guy who used to be a Democrat and turned to becoming a Republican when the realignment happened. West Virginia is very interesting, and he just hasn't done the realignment yet, but this will solidify the final realignment in American politics.
More than likely. Okay, more to come in the aftermath, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the full show, but we've got news, we've got garbage people after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.